Last week with Topher Gaylord, we talked Under Armour Mountain Running Series.
Yeah, it's a mountain running series that goes throughout the United States. And tomorrow, if you're listening to this on release date, is Friday. Tomorrow, July 22nd, is the first in three of these race series at Mount Bachelor. So it's probably too late for you to register. But the second in the series of three is going to be held on August 18th through the 20th out on the East Coast in Killington, Vermont. And this is kind of a neat way for you to get involved in a really cool race series. It has all sorts of different race distances from 5K, 10K. There's a vertical challenge. There's a mountain relay. There's a half marathon. There's a marathon and a 50K. So there's a race distance for everybody.
Not only that, Scott, it is a celebration of sorts, a community gathering, not just a race.
It is. It is. And so the Appalachians is the one that's in Killington, Vermont. And then there's another one in September in the Rocky Mountains at Copper Mountain, Colorado, which it'd be a really fun place. Kind of like a running festival, if you will.
They've taken all the coolest running places and they put a race series together.
It's an experience of a lifetime. It's their way of getting into the trail running scene. And that's one way that they want to celebrate the trail running and mountain running attitude and culture.
So go to uamountainrunning.com to register.
Use the code TRNATION at that website when you register, TRNATION. You can get 20% off the registration fee. And go to the old Under Armour website and check out their new trail running shoe, the Horizon. And today's show is brought to you by RX Bar, a new sponsor to Trail Runner Nation. RX Bar, if you go to their website, rxbar.com/TRN, and use the promo code TRN at checkout, you can get 25% off your first order. What is RX Bar? We heard about RX Bar first from Michelle Barton. Michelle, what's RX Bar?
Yes. Well, it's a really cool bar that's very natural and only has a few ingredients. So every bar has 3 egg whites, 6 almonds, 4 cashews, 2 dates, and most importantly, no BS. And each one is infused with, like, that's what caught my eye when I'm looking through the aisles at Whole Foods, and I'm like, oh, okay, no BS. So And I don't like to cook, so this is perfect.
It actually says no BS right on the label.
It does. If that doesn't catch your eye, what doesn't?
Well, I would like to tell you about my
favorite.
Okay,
what is your favorite flavor? That's what I want to hear about.
Okay, well, we're runners and we sweat, so we're always kind of craving salty things. So chocolate sea salt is amazing.
Yum.
There's also a maple sea salt for those Canadians with the maple syrup. There's a coffee chocolate that's good and a coconut. But I really love the chocolate sea salt. Everyone was like begging me for those in Mexico. And I brought them to Canada also recently. Because you can't buy them there.
You may have brought them to Canada, but did you bring them home?
Yes. Oh, no. They were devoured in like 2 days.
Don, what's your favorite flavor?
You know what? I'm gonna just have to follow Michelle's lead because she told me the favorite one was that salted chocolate and that
chocolate sea salt.
Oh, it's good. But all of them are extremely tasty.
I haven't tried that one, but the one that I really liked was the peanut butter chocolate. It reminds me of my guilty pleasure used to be Reese's peanut butter cups.
So you can eat it, feel good about yourself, feel good about the ingredients, and taste good too.
So go get 25% off to try this. They have a sample pack that you can try. But if you go to rxbar.com/TRN and use the promo code TRN, you get 25% off just for being a Nation member.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast. With me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of, like, old brothel hookers, like, buried out here.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will the group of the Nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word. No problem.
They will.
All right. Are we ready?
Go. Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation with your hosts, Scott and Don.
No. Let's do that again. With your host, Mark Cucuzella.
So, from are we the flipping
from,
it?
Yeah, from the top, Mark.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Trail Runner Nation with your new host, Dr. Mark Cucuzella.
And kicking those guys to the
coming
curb.
Coming to you live from West Virginia.
Shepherdstown,
West Virginia.
And Dr. Mark Cucuzella, we are so happy to have you back on the podcast.
It's been a while. You've been lost on the trail for a long time, Dr. Mark.
Yeah, I just finally made it home. Yeah, it has been too long.
You guys have been busy.
I've been busy.
Yeah.
But we've probably
scheduled this podcast 6 or 7 times and just have never been able to give it some wings, but we finally were able to nail us all down, and we're glad to have Dr. Mark back. He's one of our most popular guests and most frequent guests, I think.
By far, if we took his episodes and we counted the downloads, he would be on the podium for sure.
I will actually link all of the podcasts we have done with Dr. Mark in the podcast description. If that's not a reason to read the podcast description, I don't know what is.
You know, Scott, you are just doing.
We actually may get 3 more people to read the podcast description.
And we know when people read them, right? You get an alert on your phone that goes off when somebody actually
electric shock
opens up.
So people actually read your show notes?
No, they don't. No one reads them.
While we're running.
No, not even Scott. I proofread. Not even you, Scott.
Yeah, there's a lot of spelling
errors. There's
no
science here, so you don't really need show notes. It's just our opinions.
No.
Hey, Dr. Mark, what are we going to talk about today? This is, you know, we're on a run. We're with Dr. Mark Cucuzella, and we say, hey, Dr. Mark, of course he's ahead of us. We're trailing behind. What's been going on lately in your world?
Well, we've moved our store to a bigger place. So we had a small store in Shepherdstown, but now we've tripled our size. Mm. So minimalism is not dead. So good news for those of you out there that like to run in more minimal shoes and sandals. So Two Rivers Treads, the world's first minimalist shoe store, maybe at least what I know of, at least the first one in the U.S. now is moved closer to my hospital about 10 miles away in a town called Ranson, West Virginia. And we have 3 times the space. We have 4 Trueform Runner treadmills, so you can come in. And the Trueform Runner treadmill is awesome. Anyone can hop on there, and you really work on your balance and your stride and your rhythm. So that's great. Go ahead.
Tell us a little bit about that Trueform treadmill. I would like to, if I was to take my family on a vacation, I would go to Shepherdstown, West Virginia, or nearby. What was the town you say the new store's in?
10 miles away.
I would go there and I would try out the Trueform. It'd be like an amusement park. Instead of taking an amusement park ride, I would hop on the Trueform. Tell us a little bit about it and why is that such a key part of your store?
We could share a couple videos in the show notes that everyone downloads, right? The show notes. So, I mean, if you play golf, you go to the driving range and you might grab like a 7-iron blade, a very difficult club to hit, and you would just swing easy and you'd master that before you'd break out the Big Bertha. So for runners, most of the time, they just go out the door and they run and they put their Garmin on and they say, well, I'm supposed to run an 8-minute mile today. And they don't really have any thought process about how I'm moving. So the Trueform has a slight curve to it. It's motorless. So to make that go, you have to be in a good balance and a good posture. You have to engage your posterior muscles. So if you're totally overstriding and all your forces are landing in front of you, the thing pretty much just stops. So it gives you that immediate feedback. Now, there's a lot of things that we do, Scott, with cameras that people think, well, you're doing this wrong, but they're actually doing just fine. So there's a lot of things we can't see or interpret with a camera. I mean, if the leg is way out in front with the knee locked and your toe sticking right up in the air and the room shakes, you're probably hitting the ground pretty hard. But there's a lot of times people kind of touch and roll from the heel, and that's all fine. You know, they're very gentle and light on their feet. So the Trueform is like immediate feedback. If I put someone on there, give them some cues, and then stay out of the way, they're going to figure it out. And if they can't get it to move, well, then we have to take them off the Trueform. And most of the time it's trouble with the tightness in the hips. You know, they've been sitting all day and they just can't get their leg behind them, you know, and they just, no matter what they try to do, because they're stuck. So we try to figure out if it's more just neurologic, they're not using the posterior muscles and they have hip mobility, or if it's their, you know, okay, this is hardware, they're really just stuck. So it's part of an assessment. But I think if people, like what we do in the store, is if people want to go out for a run, we invite them to come in and just hop on it for like 2 minutes, you know, get the rhythm, get the hips opened up, then go outside and run. And I think it's called gait training. So if you get that rhythm, get that feeling, and then go back out to the trail, and then you're constantly reinforcing that. Some people are quick learners, some take a longer time. We used them in a bunch of high school and youth running camps this summer too. And the kids, the natural running kids, they just hop on this thing, look beautiful. And other kids take them a little while, but kids are quicker learners, I think, than adults. They pick it up really quick.
If you were to do some treadmill time, would you prefer using that true form running treadmill and or one with a motor on it?
Oh, totally the true form, because a motor pulls your leg back and you lift your foot forward. So say you're running over the trail, you have to push your foot into the ground to make you go forward. So yeah, you can keep up with a treadmill. It burns some calories if that's what you want to do, get some cardio, but it's not replicating the actual neuromuscular you're going to do going over the ground. So if you're going to waste your time on running inside, you know, you guys are trail runners here. Most people want to be outside. Yeah, do that for your skill. You know, iron out that balance and that rhythm and that posture and that hip extension, and then go out on the trail.
So,
for sure.
It's just,
especially bad weather, can't get outside, hop on the true form.
So it's just not a training gait trainer. It's actually something you could use to get in your workouts when you're inside.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, I get it.
I think an emerging thing might be, you know, studios using these, you know, as part of, like, think of like a circuit training workout. You know, where you would do, okay, you're going to do this, go do some burpees, hop on the true form for a couple minutes, go throw some things, some logs around, and kind of keep repeating those things, you know, mix it up, box jumps. You know, and I think if you're going to use the true form, it's kind of an assessment, have you earned the right to run faster? So first you master running slow on it, and then now you get them to speed up. And if they can't really speed up without their form falling apart, they probably aren't safe to go out on the road and go do intervals yet.
You know,
so I think that's another way to look at it. Go ahead.
I was riding with a triathlete some years back, and he had a crank that each pedal would operate independently. So both pedals could go to the ground, which really meant that you couldn't cheat and just not have a full stroke with your leg. You had to pull at the bottom, pull up from the, you know, when it's behind you, slide it across the top and push down. And it was really amazing at how inefficient some of these gaits, your cycling stroke was, because if you weren't doing it, the actual movement with a regular crank, you could just follow along and kind of cheat it around. But with this one, unless you were pulling it on, pushing it and sliding it all the way through all 360 degrees, it would just stop. That one would stop. Your other leg could keep going, but say your right leg would stop, your left leg would keep pedaling.
I'm picturing in my mind someone that has synchronized, both feet going down at the same time and coming up. Just kind of like a bunny rabbit.
Only you would ride it like that, Scott, but you could literally have both pedals at the bottom and you could coast with both you know, pedals at the bottom. So that kind of makes me think of that true form runner. It's a trainer, absolutely, to make sure you're efficient all the way through that gait.
I just looked on the TrueForm website, and Dr. Cucuzella, I was wondering, they have a TrueForm walking desk. So, you know, those stand-up treadmill desks, that they actually have one for the TrueForm. Maybe I need to get my boss to buy me one of those.
It'd be a pretty expensive treadmill desk, but if you don't have time to get outside and walk or run, heck yeah.
Well, I've got
it doesn't have any electronics that are going to break, which is nice about it.
Yeah, I've got to think without a motor, it should be pretty cheap, right?
Well, they're for gyms and they're industrial. So, I mean, we have them at military bases. You could put one on in the back of a C-130 and, you know, use it up in the air if you wanted to.
Hey, one of the topics that we have been throwing around for probably almost a year now, and we weren't able to get the schedules coordinated. I want to talk about longevity. you know, we had talked about Rich Hanna.
Right.
Who I think you went to college with Rich Hanna, didn't you?
No, I met Rich when I was stationed at Travis Air Force Base out near your end of the woods.
Okay.
In Northern California. And he lived in Sacramento.
Uh-huh.
So we would just occasionally kind of run into each other at races. He was probably the top runner in Sacramento at the time. Could kick my butt pretty much in any distance. Mm-hmm. Well, he ran like 2:17 in a marathon. But yeah, really nice guy. So I always liked meeting up with Rich and running with him. You know, well, just very humble, fun guy.
The topic that we were talking about, I think it was we started kind of bringing up and brainstorming this idea at the last Way Too Cool 50K, where he finished, was it second or third place?
It was AR 50.
Oh, it was AR 50. Uh-huh. I'm sorry, AR 50 mile. And he finished either second or third place. And he's how old, Don?
Well,
he's older than
he's
us.
He's younger than me.
As younger
he's on
than
the
you?
Other side of 50, probably, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah. But it's just amazing how consistently fast he's been, and you have that same pedigree. You know, you've finished, you know, sub 3 hour marathons for what? Since when and for how long have you been doing this?
Still doing it.
Yeah, I have. It's kind of I didn't realize I had this going until I went gave a talk and someone said, you know, you've been running under 3 hours for 29 years straight, because I guess all that data's out there now.
Yeah.
And then I went home and I actually checked it, and I was like, oh, heck yeah, you know. This was before this year's Boston. And then I looked up, well, maybe there's some kind of record for this crazy stuff. So there's a guy in the UK, it's not an active streak anymore. He had 33 straight years at London, you know, so I think most all, if not all of his were at London, but he had 33 straight years under three. So I did run under three at Boston this year, so I'm at 30. So my kids are going to keep me honest here for the next 3 years. Then I can quit. So I have to do it for three more years, or maybe four, to at least get the record. So my streak at 30 is, unless there's another one out there, the longest active streak of sub threes hour marathons.
So we,
it doesn't get easier as you get older. Put it that way.
You know, we've had you on the podcast for many, many different times, and we could assume what the answer is, but I'm going to ask it. What do you attribute that consistency and longevity to?
Bacon.
Oh, I like you, Dr. Mark.
You like bacon. You know, I think it's a number of things. You know, if people want to go, you just had the good Dr. Phil Maffetone on your show. Uh-huh. So trust Dr. Phil. That's all I need to tell people, right? He's Yoda. You know, so everyone needs to just, okay, Phil is right. And he was right. And he's just right. So slow the F down, right? So you got to just embrace slow, keep your strength and your speed, but do that by not running hard. So you do drills and you do short sprints and you do your kettlebells. You do the things that just as you get older, do I want to do this stuff? But you got to do that stuff, you know, not to excess, just enough to add that stimulus. So you got to keep your strength, keep your mobility. I have a little morning routine, like 5 minutes just to get my body unlocked. Every day I'm doing short sprints, skips, light plyometrics and drills. And it's not hard. It's just the stuff like we did in high school, 40 meter sprints. And a lot of easy aerobic running, you know, so really easy, you know, conversational pace, you know, it's below Phil's MAF pace, as you would say, you know, which is a conversational pace. And don't race too much. So I think you got to respect, you know, you have a few windows of time where you could actually pick up the training, do some more harder runs. But if you tried to do that at age 50 every weekend, I think it would fall apart.
You know, we've talked in the past about
good nutrition, you know, nutrition gets really more important as you get older.
We've talked in the past about as we're youthful, we have springiness in our ligaments. We have a little more bounce to us. And if you watch a young runner, you'll see them just kind of effortlessly kind of bounce off the earth and propel themselves forward. And as people get a bit older, we lose a little bit of that springiness and we become more of a lander or plodder as that some of that spring kind of leaves us. But you're talking about doing exercises and plyometrics and bounding and leaping and doing these springy type movements with the under the context or the idea that the body seems to maintain and keep what it does. Do you think that doing these types of plyometric exercises can help recover or preserve some of that springiness?
Yeah, I have a good friend. Her name's Laura Bergman, and she's like a fascia guru. But she calls it Tiggerosity.
Yeah.
You know, so we need to keep our Tiggerosity. And maybe some younger people don't remember Winnie the Pooh and Tigger. You guys obviously do.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, bounce
oh, yeah.
around on his. So just keep your Tiggerosity, I think, is the best way to think about it. And I put on my webpage, Natural Running Center, there's one of the blogs I wrote under Dr. Mark's desk. A friend of mine just had an iPhone out and just filmed what I do at the end of my runs. You know, it's just like A skips, B skips, C skips, D skips, karaoke's, burpees, you know, single leg runs. You know, so probably if you were to pick one drill that if you can't do this, you have no Tiggerosity in you. So can you pretty much run on one leg? You know, hop, 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 or do like a little four square drill, like a little hopscotch. So if you can't hop with a, you know, nice rhythm on one leg, hop, 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 really energy efficient. Think about like if you can't do that and you're trying to run 100 miles, because you really, that's what running is you're landing and hopping off of one leg. So if you're like hop, thud, thud, your 100 miler is not going to go so well. I mean, we've all watched Jim Walmsley run these ultra endurance races, and you're like, wow, what the heck is he doing? So he has awesome Tiggerosity. You know, he just runs like a spring, you know, at mile 60 in a 100-mile race. Or, you know, JFK, he's like full-out springing, you know, at sub-6-minute pace at the 40-mile checkpoint. You know, insane. Not many people can keep that Tiggerosity into these really long, long, long races.
That's
a rare breed.
You know, we talk about some people have the different cardiovascular ability. You know, if you're born with a heart and some lungs and just some metabolically, you're able to process, you know, raw material and turn it into energy, you know, and through all the different systems. But that's also a unique genetic gift too. Some people have more Tiggerosity than others right out of the gate. That's got to be one of those things that you hope your parents gave you, you know, good lungs, good heart, you know, a lot of desire, and then some Tiggerosity too.
I agree. I mean, you probably remember back in grade school. So who was the kid that could like touch the net, right?
Yeah.
But that wasn't me. I wasn't the one, you know, who could actually like dunk and, you know, in sixth grade or something. But I always had pretty good spring. You know, I was always like the, you know, the fast kid in the sprints in grade school. So, yeah, so my parents probably gave me a little bit of Tiggerosity in spring. If you were always like the plotty one, then probably you're not going to somehow at age 50, you know, all of a sudden have this springiness. But everyone can maintain it and everyone can improve their own springiness. So that's kind of how it is. Just like you can build endurance, anyone can get springier. I get people jumping rope, you know, that's perfect drill. And I think one of the things we do in my store, so we have a nice, it's called a plantar pressure plate. So it kind of shows your foot mapping. But if your foot is not working in shape like a foot, say your foot's shaped like a modern track spike, you know, where your toes are, you know, smushed together like that. So if you're listening to this right now, take your toes and squish them together and make them look like they're going to fit into a high heel shoe. And hop on one foot like that. You know, it's like thud. And now spread your toes out really wide. You know, get your foot in a strong position and hop. You know, then. So I think people forget how important the foot is to initiate that spring. And everyone can train their foot better. And if your foot's in some rigid, you know, stiff motion control or hard orthotic. Now, if you have a structural problem and you need it, that is what it is. But if you don't and you're wearing a shoe like that, that's why kids chuck their shoes when you give them those shoes, because they hate it. They can't move with spring. So keep your spring. Don't lose it, but rebuild it if you've lost it gradually. You know, start jumping rope, single leg hops. You know, safe stuff. You know, this isn't, you know, high intensity, high impact stuff.
Yeah, I like that you can rebuild your springiness and get a little your Tiggerosity back, because the body does. You can build a bicep if you start doing some bicep curls, and you can build endurance if you start running longer. So why not bring back some Tiggerosity?
So you guys know the answer to this because you're like body people. I'm just a dumb sales guy. Is the fascia itself, when you say you're building the Tiggerosity, are you developing the fascia or are you developing the muscles around the joints? What is actually developing that Tiggerosity?
Yeah, I mean, Don can answer too. You know, you're a chiropractor, but the muscles in running, muscles are mostly isometric. You know, so if I'm running and take my calf muscle, for example, you know, it's stabilizing and the lengthening is coming. So the rubber band, so to speak, is the fascia, is the Achilles tendon, the plantar fascia. So that's where all that lengthening is coming from. So when we hit the ground, the calf muscle is stabilizing us. You know, most of our core muscles are stabilizing, but all of that connective tissue, that loose connective tissue is what gives us that tigerosity. That's what's, now if that's all stuck, you know, because you've had multiple injuries and it's not sliding and gliding nicely, or your diet's horrible and you're inflamed, you won't have any of that spring. And it takes a little time. So if you wake up at, you know, 5 a.m. to run, you know, you've got to just move your body for about 15 minutes really easy, because all of that fascia's got to start to slide and glide again, you know. So just movement is like WD-40.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy fat is like WD-40 into the fascia. And probably you realize yourself there's some days you kind of recover well, and then you think back, well, what did I eat the last 24 to 48 hours? And if you didn't have any really good healthy fats, like some, you know, quality olive oil, some avocados, maybe a little bacon in there, if you, you know, you got a good farm fresh bacon, you don't recover. I think that's why, like, the low fat, high carb diet for longevity and endurance sports, I don't see it. I don't see many people running well at age 50 and 60 who really prescribe by that. Most of them became pre-diabetic like myself and then red pill methadone, and then now they're back running well again. You know, we all went down that path because that's what everyone did, you know, paid our dues, and now we're coming out of it.
I know that there are different type of fibers when you get into tendons and ligaments, and everybody has different percentages of those fibers. Some are very plastic and more have more stability. Others have more elasticity to them, depending on the type. I'm recalling back some old stuff out of some textbooks, and you can call all BS on it if you want. If you want, Dr. Mark, I'm trying to recall.
Is it a textbook? It's all true.
Yeah, well, that's true. I've bonked on the trail a few times since I've read this. And so I'm wondering, we watch muscle fibers change when you have more of the explosive type, more of the endurance type. I wonder when you put a demand on some ligaments, tendons, and some of those structures, if there's any changing or morphing, or you're more predisposed to lean one direction in those. I don't know.
Yes, I think we're talking about a couple of different things. There's muscle fiber types. So, I mean, I think a really good read that you know, any non-medical person is just fascinating is The Sports Gene with David Epstein. You know, so he has a whole chapter on the collagen. You know, so why are they the best marathoners? Like in 1 month of October, in some year, I think it was 2012, like 200 people ran a marathon in under 2:10, something crazy.
Yeah.
Like in one month from one tribe, you know, blew away like the last 10 years of American distance running. You know, so why is that? And then you have Jamaica, which, you know, why is this one little island producing all of these sprinters? So, yeah, you're going to have a certain percent of what are called fast twitch and slow twitch fibers. But there are these fibers in the middle called fog fibers or fast twitch oxidative fibers, which can go one way or another. These are the explosive, powerful muscles that can become oxidative, meaning they can become aerobic. And if you're doing any event over 400 meters, you want to build a big aerobic capacity but have speed. So those are the muscles that can go one in either direction. So if you train like Arthur Lydiard methods, took fast kids who had a lot of fast twitch fibers but did endurance running in those kids, and these were the best 800-meter runners like Peter Snell. And then you took the one who was the pure marathon runner. So foundationally, it's all the same. If it's an 800 on up, it's an endurance run. 400 down, it's a sprint. So yes, you can adapt your fibers to optimize for whatever specific, you know, we call it specificity, you want to do. But I would never be a world-class sprinter because I'm probably blessed with more of these slow twitch type fibers. But in Jamaica, maybe different. So yeah, now fascia is different too. So fascia doesn't have fast twitch, slow twitch fibers. Fascia is connective tissue. It's not contractile tissue. So I think fascia, I mean, every tissue we have, you can add a little stress, it adapts. So fascia will become stronger. It can lengthen with mobility work. Yeah, it's going to slide and glide better. neuromuscularly, it's going to fire better. The more like you look at someone who just does a lot of jump rope, they get a nice rhythm. So yeah, you can always train how the brain and that fascia is working to create that nice spring. You know, I don't know. No one really has the same kind of science because you don't muscle biopsy it. Like fascia is just, it's kind of a mystery tissue, you know, and that's what's kind of cool about it. You know, I think if anyone's interested, there's a book called Anatomy Trains by Thomas Myers. You know, so in medical school, we just dissected the fascia away to get to the muscle because that's what we thought what was important. Well, all this other tissue is just garbage. And now we're realizing everything we dissected away is probably that stuff's really important. Because what do runners get? They get fasciosis. They get tendinosis. You know, they rarely do distance runners like rip a muscle in two. It's all this connective tissue that they get hurt.
Hey, Don, have you ever wondered how many books Dr. Mark has read and has at the tip of his tongue the title and the author?
No, I don't wonder because
it's
countless.
Pretty amazing. Yeah. It's pretty amazing how you can just throw that stuff out. I'm always impressed.
I have Halfheimer's, but I'm drink a little more red wine to keep me away from that.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and edit my comment earlier when I was talking about the fibers and stuff, so I could throw a few of those terms in that Dr. Mark said. So it sounds like I was halfway.
I hope that wasn't too confusing. Just
no,
do
it was good. It was
all. At the end of the day, you don't need to know any of the bullshit. Just jump rope.
It was very very good. It was very good.
Jump rope on one foot.
Let's talk about, you're talking about jumping rope on one foot, but you brought up something very interesting. A word
with your eyes closed.
Yes, to get some good proprioceptive training. And I was thinking yesterday, because we were on a run, and we were talking about the rhythm, and you mentioned rhythm, and how important rhythm is to your sub-3 marathon, just the rhythm that you pick up, or a training run that's 10 miles long. Do you establish a rhythm in your head, or what do you pay attention to sink into this rhythm?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who's maybe been a track runner, and on the trail, you get a rhythm too, because rhythm, everything in movement is rhythm. You look at any tribal dance, or you go, I'm sure you guys go out to the club on Saturdays, you know, loud music, and
yeah,
you start.
That's what we do.
What's that stuff you do where you're kind of bouncing around and slamming into each other? You know, everyone's in the same rhythm.
You can do that
all night, you know, right? You throw a couple drinks in you and do that for 4 hours. You're like, wait, how did you do that? Because you're in this rhythm and it's very efficient and the brain is in this happy place. You know, they're called alpha waves, you know, so this, you know, they're endogenously produced opiates. That's called endorphins. And then there's also these endogenously produced, they're called endocannabinoids, you know, so we can talk about, you guys are in California, right? The pot's legal there and in West Virginia, it's not. But this is like legal pot. So there's endocannabinoids. So there's all these different brain chemicals that happen from rhythm, whether you're running or playing music or listening to music. But if you're, and everyone's rhythm is a little bit different, but most are tuned pretty similar. So if you watch a pack of good runners run together, especially like watch a pack of Kenyans run together, and they're all in the same, this beautiful rhythm, whether they're running like at 9 minute a mile, 7 minute a mile, 5 minute a mile, 4.5 minute a mile, you know, they're just kind of applying a little more force to the ground to open up their strides. You know, that sub-2 project, you know, when you saw the pack running together, I mean, they were like rhythm to rhythm. They're all elite level runners. And it was like a pack of gazelles just running right on rhythm. And they probably fed off each other. And some that probably gave them, you know, superhuman powers that they didn't even know about. Mm. Crew, you know how this, the coxswain is making the rhythm?
Yeah.
And they're going to kind of go on that rhythm, find that rhythm, go to the next rhythm, and that's how they go.
You know, do you find that when you're running with different running partners that you tend to copy their rhythm, depending on if you're leading or following?
I copy their pace, but maybe not their rhythm, because I have a similar rhythm whether I'm running really slow or quicker, you know, because it's a springy rhythm.
Uh-huh.
So say we're running like 10 minutes a mile, just nice, easy run. Someone else might be kind of have a slow cadence and mine might be a little quicker. So, but I think somehow when you run enough with someone, you tend to find each other's rhythm. And if I'm trying to help someone learn a little bit, I'll try to bring them a little more into my rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we start these slow jogging drills. You know, let's just run ridiculously slow, you know, in a rhythm, like ridiculously slow. And you do a slow jogging drill. take their shoes off. When you take people's shoes off, they tend to find a similar rhythm because they can't rely on the shoe as cushion. They have to create the right spring. So if you want to find your rhythm, chuck your shoes, get on a firm surface, and jog really slow, and you'll find your rhythm.
We've talked about it in the past, but let's go over it again about the 180 cadence, about rhythm and how it relates to 180 beat steps per minute, and why maybe 180 is even important.
Yeah, I don't think the number is important. I think everyone's going to have, like, if you've been running sticky and slow and your fascia's all stuck and you don't have any spring, and if I tell you to run 180, it's not going to work. So everyone has to, so I think people can find what their rhythm is naturally by taking their shoes off and jumping rope. You know, if you go to the playground, all the kids are probably about 180 because they're not screwed up like us. But if you went to like a Gold's Gym and, you know, or Silver Sneakers, you know, where people are like 70 plus and you watched them jump rope, they all got a little different rhythm because their bodies tune differently through age. So I don't force any number on anybody, but I just want them to feel the spot, kind of that sweet spot where they feel like they're springing. And that's a tough thing to kind of define on, you know, on the, over the internet here, but, you know, take your shoes off, get your feet nice and wide, you know, so the feet can work like a spring. And I always look at the feet, because if your feet aren't working, say your toes are smushed together and your foot's collapsed in, you'll never get a good rhythm because you hit the ground and there's no spring back. Everything just is like thud. So if your feet are working well, then you can find the rhythm. So if you're out there listening to this, start with your feet. You know, can you hop up and down on one foot nice and easy? If you can't, something's going on with your foot. And you got to go see Don if you're in California, have him look at your foot and figure it out.
Most of the high-tech watches now have a metronome built into them that will help you with your cadence. What do you think of those? What you're saying is 180 is not a magical number. I can't go out and say, you know what, I want to improve my rhythm, so I'm going to set my watch at 180.
Yeah, you may totally screw yourself up doing that.
Okay. So it's all about feel. I think
it's
about
feel. And if you can dial it up a little bit, because if you know, okay, I'm just kind of, my brain always just kind of shuts off and I kind of plod into the ground, and, you know, treadmill makes a lot of noise if you're running inside, dial it up, find what your kind of natural cadence is there, which might not be optimal for you. And there's studies showing that I think Heiderscheid had one where if you just dial up your cadence 5%, which isn't like you go on and just run the way you run. So your freely chosen cadence may not be your optimal cadence. So if you dial it up 5%, your running economy, which means how much energy are you using at a certain pace, improves. So that's a good thing. But if you're adding stress to different tissues, maybe you'll get hurt. So I think there's a lot of unknowns. So again, just listen to your body, but yeah, just understand, just feel the spring, take your shoes off, hop around, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Dr. Mark, maybe you can give us an idea on this one. Since the body does so many things well, I mean, it keeps us at 98.6. We look at our pH and our level in our bloods. I mean, it just monitors and does things so perfectly. But why is it that we don't run with optimal cadence? How come we don't have that number where you have to, if you dial it up 5%, maybe you're better? Why don't we just zone in and hone in on that number naturally?
Because we wear shoes.
Oh.
All right. So, I mean, I kid you not. So it's because at age 3, you know, your mother put you in a stiff supportive shoe, because that's what in those days, that's what the, you know, podiatry association and the medical and sports medicine establishment told you. I just wrote, it was kind of nice. I just wrote a textbook chapter on children's shoes it's a textbook out on podiatric sports medicine, and they accepted it. And it's all about not putting shoes on kids. So now it's not disruptive to say that. I think we've really kind of come full circle here. So if you go over to any developing part of the world where they don't wear shoes and they have beautiful rhythm, they haven't messed themselves up. And going to any like 4-year-old preschool, they're all pretty good. You know, first grade playground, they're all pretty good. When does it start to differentiate? Probably second, third, fourth grade, when they start to wear these clunky shoes. So if you have kids out there, just keep them out of stiff shoes. You know, get them very thin shoes, and they will keep their rhythm. They have to. There's no other way.
And to your point, Dr. Mark, I was at my mom's not too long ago, and there is a cute little small cowboy boot there, and it's as stiff as can be, and the toe is this point. That was mine. She said, I put you in these. And I thought, oh my goodness, it's amazing I can still walk.
Hey, Dr. Yeah. Mark, what music is on your iPod that syncs with your natural running rhythm?
Ooh.
You know, I just listen to Trail Runner Nation on
my iPod.
I don't listen to music when I run. I just, it's my escape. So I'll either just listen to nothing, I like listening to audiobooks and podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, that I didn't think I ever would. And someone sent me, you know, you guys sent me those beautiful Trex titanium ones. So that makes, I love those.
Yeah.
So I got like my first wireless headphones before those ones, which are the most awesome. And I was like, wow, I can like listen to a book. And I found that, you know, you'd look forward to your next run because you picked up in the middle of a book. But I'll either listen to nothing listen to books or podcasts. There's so much great stuff in podcasts now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Scott's
5 years ago. Nothing. It's a different world now.
I'll tell you Scott's rhythm, and that belongs to
staying alive. That's our CPR rhythm. That's like really fast.
No, not the Bee Gees. It's worse.
It's worse. It's way worse. It's a guilty pleasure. I can't stand them unless I'm running.
And I can't stand them when he's running because I can't catch him. I was like, dude, are you listening to the Dixie Chicks again? You're like running a 6-minute pace right now.
I do have the Immigrant Song on my phone. You guys know that one, Led Zeppelin. So if you're really feeling bad, it's the one that goes, I can't do it. You guys know that one, the screaming, you know,
Yep.
Playing with the ice and snow.
That was good. What I'll do is I'll put a bunch of those little clips together and we'll have a full song sung by you.
Yeah, maybe you can like clip in the Immigrant Song.
We should end the podcast with that.
We will.
You know, I go back to one of the books that I read that got me kind of hooked on this, which was same with a lot of people, is the book Born to Run.
Mm-hmm.
And Caballo Blanco is explaining to Chris McDougall how to run. And one of the mantras that I still remember from that book that I think plays into this whole rhythm and efficiency type thing is the mantra, easy, light, smooth, then fast. And if you're running easy and you're staying light on your feet, getting that springiness, and trying to be smooth, I often find myself, and I want to throw this at you too, Dr. Mark, rather than going out, we've talked about this number of times, and just doing the same old trail, the same old pace, the same old, you know, everything, is to make your training very specific. How important is it to throw in a training session where all you're worried about and all you're thinking about is rhythm?
I mean, I think so. Most running really should be recovery, you know. So recovery means you feel better when you get home than when you went out the door. And so I think if you're running and you're not in a good rhythm, maybe you have a very specific strength or speed thing that you're trying to do, but even fast running is rhythm. So that should be a given, is that you're running. If you're not running in a good rhythm, meaning you're not feeling that light spring, probably time to, you know, pack it in for that day, because I don't think you're accomplishing anything. You know, take the dog for a walk instead. You know, mm-hmm. So if you're really just like, you know, I haven't done a 100-miler. I've done, you know, 50-plus races. And I don't try to run the next day because I know there's no, you know, freaking way I would have any rhythm. I'll go for a nice walk or cut the grass just to get some mobility back. But yeah, if you're not feeling that, something's going on. Either you're overtrained, you know, underslept, you know, time not to run that day, because you're going to come back and you're going to be sore because you're going to not be, you won't be running in the way. Running is elasticity. Walking is pendular. So just switch it up, get in the pool that day or something.
Your running gait,
get a rhythm in the pool, you know, that's same thing, but without stress and the tissues of running.
Your running gait and efficiency is amazing. Do you still have to think about form when you run, Or is it I just do, become yeah, natural?
Yeah. I mean, you think of like, you know, hands, tall. I mean, the basics are, you know, we teach kids, and I think, you know, Golden Harper uses this too, you know, kind of chicken wings. You know, you find that if you just get the arms in the right place, get tall, get your posture, look straight ahead, get your breathing, you know, get your feet activated, and then it all comes together. You don't have to think about all that at once, but if you're kind of in a rut, you're just like not feeling good, you just kind of do a body reset, and then it tends to come back.
On that run we were talking about rhythm, we were talking about going through the long miles, because you're out there for a long time, and when you're doing some of these races, and we discussed night running or day running with your hat pulled down, and all you can really see is what's around you, and you just get into a zone. You don't worry about how fast the landscape is going by you. You don't pay attention to that. You just get into mm-hmm. that rhythm, and you listen to your feet, you listen to your breathing, and all of a sudden you're just in this zone and things are going by very smoothly. And when you start looking around saying, oh, that tree's right there, or I'm going up this hill, you pull that the brim of that hat down and just focus on the moment and the experience in real time, mm-hmm. mindfulness, experiencing mm-hmm. where you are and staying there and making it comfortable and not feeling obligated to push yourself at any pace except what feels good. Your all-day pace. You can go forever pace. And when you hit that zone, boy, that's running. That's
magic.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's what we enjoy doing. Yeah, so you're right on there. You know, so I think the place we experience that rhythm is in that pace, which is kind of that math pace. And I think there's something, I don't think anyone's really defined it. So in that lower effort pace, our body's using more fat as fuel. And that gives a different brain response too. So most of us feel, you know, 20 minutes into a run when we're actually burning fat, we just for some reason feel better. So maybe that has something to do with it too. I'm not entirely sure. I think everyone has their own unique wiring, and you got to find it, but you got to slow down to feel it.
And you talked earlier about alpha waves, and you know, maybe there's some. And I couldn't define alpha waves. I think it's before B waves. That's all I know. But is there
beta waves?
Is there something going on in the brain when we hit that rhythm and that happy spot, and we're burning clean fuel instead of relying on, you know, sugars that you're talking about?
We enter that in. I have it written down here. I don't know if I have it spelled right. The endocannabinoids. How did you say it?
That, right? I'm in the military, so I can't do the real cannabinoids, but. So that's going on too. And I mean, you know it, you get this, it's like the legal high, you get that thing. And I think it's different for everybody. And I think that pace has to be, I mean, just to define it for people, because people are like, what's a math pace? Do I need a heart rate monitor? So that pace really is what's called this thing called the ventilatory threshold. So when we go out for a group run with people, when we start out, everyone's kind of talking and everyone's happy, and then someone decides to go a little faster, and then all of a sudden a couple people are like, they're above that conversational pace. Now, those people just fell out of that zone, because when we shift from fat to carbohydrate metabolism, we create more carbon dioxide, and we've got to blow that off. So if you're running with someone and they all of a sudden pick up their respiratory rate, they're out of that happy space, and they can't sustain that for long. So all you need to know is if you're in that pace and you can sing a song, talk to someone, laugh, you know, it's all good.
You know, I think that's really, really important. And
you don't need a heart rate monitor if you understand that. That's all you need to know about what that pace is.
I struggled for the longest time, and even until recently, I went and had myself tested. Not that kind of tested. But went to a lab and did some testing with my heart rate, and for the longest time I beat myself up because the Maffetone heart rate method,
180 minus your age with a little bit of
some tweaking,
maneuvering,
does not
tweaking
work for me.
It
does not work for me, and for the longest time I always beat myself up. I should be at like 135 or 132 or something like that. I'm at 135 walking across the room. And
you need to go slower.
Well, this is what I started listening to Brad Kearns, who has a podcast called Primal Endurance. And he said go out for an easy run and breathe through your nose. If you can breathe through your nose and run, that's an easy pace. That is the Maffetone heart rate pace. And I would breathe through my nose and I'd look down and I'd be 167.
So you're a little bit higher actually then.
And so I think it's important to know that the heart rate monitor, some of us are right in the middle of that bell curve. Some of us are on the low end. Some of us are on the high end.
Some of us are on the other page, Scott.
I am on it in a different book. And so I think it's what you said are these intrinsic methods to find out if you're at an easy pace. I think that's more important than using a heart rate monitor.
Listening to
yourself. Yeah, I think you see what aligns. I think the math pace and Phil's work is kind of, if you took all comers, this is a good safe place to start.
Yes.
You know, it's a great safe. Now, if you want to get more specific, you got to go to a lab, you know, and spend a couple hundred bucks and do a VO2 max test. And then they'll show you where these different levels are, where you're carbon dioxide exchange shifts and you're burning more carbohydrates, and then that can get you precise. But at the end of the day, I think if you can breathe through your nose and talk, that tells you, that gets you pretty close too. So if all these numbers are lining up, okay, I can talk at this pace, my heart rate's at this pace, you know, I can breathe through my nose. We actually, for our high school and middle school camps, just to let people know what a recovery run is, we get duct tape and tape their mouths shut and make them go run. And it's pretty fat. They all want to talk. So it's kind of fun. You take them like a half mile and they can't talk, but you tape their mouth shut. And it's kind of cool. They realize how slow they need to go. And you go like really slow and you say, well, this is okay. This is what you need to do on your recovery days.
So you get a twofer. You get two benefits. You learn how to run at an easy pace and you get them to shut up.
And you don't have to hear them all talk. It's good.
So then they take them off
and then they start laughing. It's great. They just love to talk.
I have a question for you, Scott. So you went and did that test where you watched the lines cross and you found out where you're most efficient. So my question to you is, did you try Brad's breathe through your nose only and also their testing? Did you find that those heart rate values were close? They were.
Dead on. And in fact, I started breathing through my nose and trying to really, I was on a comeback. And so I was going out and going really slow. I wasn't running with anybody because you have to run by yourself when you're starting to get that fitness back. But I found that I was walking more than I was running and it was really bothering me. And so I listened to Brad Kearns. He said, breathe through your nose. So I went out and I just run breathing through my nose, saw my heart rate pick back up. Then I went to the lab and I talked to the guy giving the tests, which we need to have him on one of these days. He's a very smart dude, and told him about my situation. And he goes, well, it's a bell curve. You could be, maybe you're not in the middle of the curve. Maybe you're on the far end of the curve. And so we did the test and it was right on 168. We've been talking about this for years, Don.
Yeah.
We go out and Don's at a 125 and I'm at a 168 and we're running the same pace.
Maybe good.
Yeah. We're both breathing the same. We're both conversating.
I encourage people to get exercise. I mean, it really, you find a good person you trust. You know, if you guys know people out there that know what they're doing. I mean, it costs maybe 150, 200 bucks, but you know, people will drop that on a pair of shoes, you know, or a good night out on the town for dinner. So
by the way,
it's not a big deal.
By the way, Dr. Mark, he knew you. He dropped your name, and I go, oh, yeah, we know Mark.
I've been tested a bunch, and I learn new things every time I go into the lab because you think something's going on. And like you, Scott, so I'm you know, in that very efficient aerobic pace at a heart rate of like 155, 160, still burning fat, you know, at like 90% of my max. You know, that's a dietary thing too, but that's the sweet spot where you want to be, where you can run 6 minutes a mile and not be burning sugar. You know, then you can run a long time, you know, if everything else holds together. But at least that part's not your worry. You're not worried about fuel. You're worried about other things.
You know, what's really fun, Dr. Mark, is when we're wearing our heart rate monitors, when Don's wearing his and I'm wearing mine, and they cross over, and he looks down at his watch and he sees 168. He's reading my heart rate monitor. You should see him freak out. It's really, really fun.
What happened to me? Hey, Dr. Mark, you're so well read. What are you reading now? What interests you? What kind of new things that are coming out that are slipping by us because we're not reading what you're reading?
I just picked up a really good book. It's called The the Nature Fix. It's a book about just being outside, and I like that. You know, because I think you guys are trail people. There's something really unique about being outside that you, is irreplaceable. You know, forest bathing. So I think all that stuff about being outside and play. So that's, I have that. And I just, Rob Wolf, I just picked up his book. I want to read his book. He just wrote a book called Wired to Eat. And he was really into the early days of the paleo movement, worked with Lauren Cordain. So I'm going on vacation next week to the beach. I'll grab that one and pick that up.
We've talked about diet also many times. How has your diet changed in the last 2 years?
Hasn't really changed. I've been, you know, pretty much, you know, healthy fat, low carbohydrate for about 5 or 6 years now. Mm-hmm. So really not that much different. I still drink my wine every night, maybe a little too much now, but depending on how stressful the day is. But, I eat by the seasons, go to the farmer markets, you know, eat a lot of eggs and, you know, eat meat, cheese, butter. You know, pretty much I don't have any grain or cereal. That stuff just doesn't agree with me now.
Do you have any guilty pleasures?
I like dark chocolate, and I can stop at a couple chunks of it. You know, I like nuts. So you just have to be careful with, I'm not trying to gain or lose weight, so I don't have any real goal there. I'm just trying to keep my energy. But if you are someone who's trying to reduce weight, you know, people may say, well, you can have dark chocolate and nuts. And if you're trying to lose weight and that's your weakness and you pick up a whole, you know, 2 pound bag of nuts, it's not going to work for you. I mean, so you have to know if you're someone who can have one or two of something, you know, which we call like a moderator, or if you're someone that if you have one chunk of it, the whole thing's gone. I think the majority of people are more in that camp. You know, if they're on the addictive foods, if they have like one bite of it, it's like have a bite of a cinnamon roll and try to put the thing away. It doesn't work. So yeah, I just eat like my t-shirt now. It says, keep calm and eat real food. But I'm more insulin resistant. So my real food needs to be less carbohydrate than an 18-year-old kid, you know, who might be able to have more carbohydrate than me.
You listened to our last podcast with Dr. Phil Maffetone. And he said, and I can't remember the exact word he said, we were asking him if he still has to, if he has any guilty pleasures or if he has any cravings for sugar or carbohydrates. And he said, actually, not too long ago, he's actually gotten to the point where it annoys him. is that the phrase he used or something like that? Do you remember that?
He's 100%. He still has his wine, though. So Phil still has his wine. Good wine.
He talked about the addictive nature of foods, and he blamed his addiction on the time that from his mother that while he was an embryo was eating a lot of sugars and then nursed him and moved him forward through his adolescence on sugar. And so a lot of us are just brought up that way.
Yeah. I think it's, you can reverse it though. Like Phil said, I mean, how many years did it take him? So, I mean, he's been, you know, pretty much off junk food for 30 years. So now it doesn't faze him. But probably the first 5 years, I'm sure, you know, it wasn't quite so easy. And now it doesn't faze him. He's 30 years in. You know, I'm working with people who are like a week in a hospital trying to get rid of this stuff. So they have a lot of cravings and food addictions.
It's tough on the body, isn't it? I mean, on the pancreas and the liver and the gastrointestinal system.
Gosh,
stuff that we pour down, it is just difficult for us, because we weren't intended to eat that way or take those medications that are there just to manage a chronic condition. We abuse these bodies, and they are tolerant. They seem to just accept it for many, many years. It's amazing how durable they are with what
the human
we do to it.
Machine is very durable, but it will break.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are active and healthy, but, you know, if you walked in my world every day up to the second floor of the hospital, people our age are broken, beyond broken, and if they're lucky, they get a second chance. So they've gone down the path, you know, developed diabetes, you know, already have kidney disease, liver disease, fatty livers, 4 to 10 stents in their hearts, you know, so can they get out of it? Yeah, they can get it. They don't have a choice. It's like, tell me how that ends. It doesn't end pretty unless they fix the problem. You know, we're taught in a, you know, a medical culture that it needs medical management, but we need to tell people, patients like your listeners need to be smarter than their docs. I mean, no kidding. You know, we don't learn how to keep people healthy in medical school. We learn how to treat disease, but that's what we learn. So it's up to you, you know, as an individual to figure out how to stay healthy.
You know, that's a great point, that doctors are there to help keep us alive and keep us going. But I saw something just posted just the other day about SteadyMD or something and your name associated with it. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that is?
Yeah, so I think the world of medicine's changing because it's an open access world now. And I mean, you guys are getting information off the internet. So the old days of, you know, trust your doctor, they're going to have 5 minutes with you. They have a white coat and they're going to tell you what to do. I mean, that just is not the way it is. So people need to have an exchange with someone who has time and can listen to them and know them and really just help guide them to not need them, basically. Make, you know, I'd like to be obsolete one day. So there's a company that started, I believe, but maybe about a year ago, working with athletes and some different kind of special groups to try to connect them to a physician that actually wanted to work with them to, and they, you don't need to be in their office. I mean, here I'm with you on Skype and I can't listen to your heart, but most of what keeps us healthy is really just understanding, you know, how to stay healthy. So this company is designing virtual medicine that, you know, you could sign up. And I think you, on the website, you can reserve a spot now. So the doctor who's going to be the primary doctor, his name is Josh Emder in Boulder, and he's a marathoner. He ran under three hours at Boston. He's been a family doctor for about 15 years. So I'm helping them kind of shape what this is, you know, some of the things I think are important to stay healthy, kind of consult with them. And Josh is going to be the one. So if you needed, you know, say you just had a question or you had a symptom, you know, you could actually text him, FaceTime him, say, Josh, what's up? This is going on. And I mean, think about that. Like, I give my text number out to patients all the time. They think, wow, that's freaky. I'm like, well, you know, I'm trying to get you to make change. And if you had to call the clinic and they said, well, maybe you can come in 2 months, we don't call our doctors, and you're trying to decide whether this or that you eat today is going to affect this or that, and you want some guidance, you know, it needs to be real time. I don't mind getting messages and texts if it helps someone. Because ultimately they figure it out, then they don't need you anymore. So that's kind of what we're trying to do, is just help people become their own empowered patients. And if they have questions, you know, have someone they trust who knows them and isn't going to give them a stock answer.
So you're not necessarily talking about just running questions. You're just talking about health questions with this group, right?
Yeah. So say you're at a cholesterol of 250 with an HDL of 100 and someone said you need a statin. Dead off, right? No debate. Doctor says you must be on a statin. And you're like, well, I read this, that, and the other. And they say, no, you must be on a statin. That doctor's not listening to you. There's many ways to determine, do you need a statin? What's the risk benefit of a statin? How many people like you do they need to give a statin to help maybe reduce one heart attack over 10 years? How many people are going to get muscle cramping? So you just want to be able to have a shared decision making. And that's all we can do, is give you the data, what we know today, and what other tests we can do to try to determine whether you need it. But that's what I think most people want.
It looks like, I'm on the website right now, and it looks like that you kind of get paired with a doctor that is passionate about what you're passionate about. So if you're into CrossFit, the doctors are
Weight training. Dr. Spencer, yeah, so paired, because then they understand some of the stresses of your training.
Right.
I think the worst thing a doctor can say to a runner is, you know, Scott, Don, I don't think you can run anymore. Imagine if I took that away from you, like just like that. Like, you'd be like, no, I'm not accepting that answer. Because that's like, wow, someone, like, you woke up tomorrow and someone said, Lee, you can't run for the rest of your life, period. Yeah, think about that. You're like, no, it's not happening.
And we've all met people like that have said, yeah, my doctor said don't run. And I ask him, well, when did that doctor tell you that? You know, 30 years ago. I'm thinking, man, that's pretty good predictive.
I'm still going. It's okay.
And that's true. I tell that part of your story, and so make sure I'm telling it right. You had some issues with your first metatarsal, and that's where you started to look deep into this gait change in running. Is that right?
Yeah, it was year 2000, I had both of my feet operated on for hallux valgus, which is kind of that bunion deformity, and bad arthritis in my first toes. I had no tuberosity in my feet anymore. They looked like a track spike. But yeah, I mean, the accepted answer was, oh, you can't run anymore. But then I really missed it after about a month and realized, okay, well, most of what I've learned in medical school is wrong. You know, I've realized that pretty early in my life. So that led me to say, okay, I'm going to go figure this out. So that was, I'm still figuring it out, but that was my last running injury. Knock on wood, that was 17 plus years ago. I'm not afraid to get a running injury anymore. I mean, I think I've got a lot of headroom, between myself and an injury, what I do every day.
Well, once again, Dr. Mark has dropped some wisdom and knowledge on us. I just looked up while we were doing this podcast. You've been on our podcast 14 times.
14 times? Oh, my God. When was the first one? 5 years ago?
You know what? Keep talking, and I will find. First one was in 2006.
2006?
Yep.
No.
I'm sorry, 2012. Sorry, 2012. Okay, 2012.
Yeah, I don't even think when was the first podcast?
2007.
Hey, 2012. That's 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago.
Yeah.
It was the first time we had you on the podcast. Barefoot Running Style was the title. Barefoot Running Style was the title of that podcast.
And one of them.
Barefoot. I haven't broken my feet yet or cut my foot on glass. How many barefoot miles? Went out barefoot on the streets this morning. It was wonderful.
And I don't think we've mentioned, mentioned yet the 8 minute and 26 second video.
I think it's getting close to 1 million views. Maybe you guys will throw it over 1 million views.
Well, we need to have a party. We need to have a party.
Plug. You're my biggest fans. You're how many of those 900,000 views?
Yeah, me personally. 900,000. I have it running on a loop on three different computers. Yeah, on three computers, just looping. Just looping.
Above, what's that Gangnam Style? How many?
And more people should be watching yours and not Gangnam Style dance.
It's more helpful. Yeah. More helpful.
Lady Gaga.
Dr. Mark, we came here without an idea of what to talk about, and an hour slips away just because you have so much knowledge, and we just throw a subject out and you name three articles that have read by leading authors, and you all have them at the tip of your tongue like we planned this out. But
and I now have three new books on my reading list.
Yeah, read The Nature Fix. That'll confirm why you're on the trail.
And read
Scott's... go find a True Form runner out there. So go, if you haven't run on the True Form runner, I'm not sure where in Northern California they have one. I can try to find out for you, but go play with that and see if you're smooth and efficient or if you got some issues. You may have some issues.
Yeah, they must be out here. Let's go do that. Field trip. Yeah, let's make the treadmill of truth.
Let's go find one, Don.
Let's go find one.
Come out. Do you guys do any business trips to D.C.? We're not far from D.C.
We need
or if any of your
vacation.
Listeners are... Like, we're only 60 miles from D.C. Come out to Two Rivers Treads. Check it out.
So
make
you guys,
a pilgrimage to the Barefoot Running Store.
As I recall, we've talked about it before. You do some live consults from your running store about shoes. Are you guys still doing that with your shoe experts at your store?
Yeah, if you call our store, they can, like, wherever you are, FaceTime and... look at your feet, look at your shoes. I mean, I think that's like a doctor visit now, right? So you got to be able to, there's only so much you can do just with a voice or something like, you got to be able to see things.
Yes. Yeah, so you get on there and you can actually talk and discuss and do a face-to-face because you go to a running store that isn't put their staff together exactly right. And you can end up with just somebody that's carrying around very little knowledge, but trying to persuade you into what shoe that they think you should be in. But going to someone that at your store, I think they've probably been
my
prepared
staff are
pretty
awesome.
Well. Pretty well, yeah.
They learn from everyone who comes in. You know, that's what's cool because, I think you have to see, just like a doc, you've got to see like thousands and thousands of things again and again before things fall into pattern.
Mm-hmm. And patterns, that's another topic.
As a chiropractor, you see it. I mean, you see someone walking in, you don't even need to examine them. You know what's going on, and your exam confirms what you're already starting to see.
Right? Well, yeah, what,
Sure.
What they said in school was 80% of the diagnosis comes from the history that you take, and the other 20% is confirmation and exam. If you just listen to what they're telling you.
Yeah, you don't need fancy tests. All that stuff's all hogwash. I mean, all the MRIs and all this stuff.
And sometimes it can be a bit misleading.
You can also learn more from Dr. Mark at one of the best websites out there, the Natural Running Center. Just to name a few topics that are on there: natural running form, endurance engine, footwear essentials, fun drills, transitioning, being injury free. That's just a few of the topics you can find at naturalrunningcenter.com.
Dr. Mark Cucuzella, as always, our pleasure. And it's nice to be able to run a full hour with you without breathing hard. Just kind of nice. It starts with one thing. I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock takes life away. It's so unreal. Didn't look out below. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on to, didn't even know. I wasted it all just to watch you go. I kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time I tried so hard and got so far. Try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to remind myself how I tried so hard. In spite of the way you were mocking me, acting like I was part of your property, remembering all the times you fought with me, I'm surprised it got so. Things aren't the way they were before. You wouldn't even recognize me anymore. Not that you knew me back then, but it all comes back to me in the end. You kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. Will eventually be a memory of a time when I tried so hard and got so far. But in the end, it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all. But in the end, it doesn't even matter. I put my trust in you, pushed as far as I can go.